Blog Talk Radio.
Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na banja latu. Kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, koma lelo lipazulika. Nikale kalapo kondwela lelo heka sitikumbukila kweta chokela amai kuvutika mutima koma zoti tazisoa nimaona misozi masomu wake nimafuto abale nimafuto
Good morning, good afternoon, welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. My name is Matilda Mwabalukas. I am your host here today, sitting in for Twambo Kapilikisha on Diaspora and Truth. I would just like to say welcome to my guest today. Good morning, Andrew. Okay. Mr. Charlie, good morning.
I don't know if that is where Andrew is.
Okay.
Good morning, 661.
He should be on a Skype number.
Okay, we don't have a Skype number yet.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Okay. Someone said.
I think it's evening where Andrew is. How are you?
No, this is Joseph. Mr. Banda.
Oh, Mr. Banda, welcome. Good afternoon.
How are you? Good afternoon. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Mr. Joseph Banda is in Germany. He's one of our special guests today. We're just waiting for Andrew Kaniki to join us.
Hello, this is Andrew here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, great. Perfect. We can hear you. Welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Diaspora and Truth, the program for today. We're having a roundtable discussion to look at the views of the Zambians in different countries and their goals for Zambia. So welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thank you.
Okay, great. All right. I think we'll be joined by one more. He's just a support guest. I hope he can join in, and that's our friend Siddiq Agelo. So he should be calling in any time. But we'll go ahead and start. So, Andrew, you are based in Perth, Australia?
Yes, I am.
And you've been there since 2007, is that correct?
Yes, I've been here since 2007, yeah.
All right. So we're looking forward to hearing your perspective on what you have accomplished and what you mean to accomplish in Zambia. And Joseph, you grew up in the United States, but you're now based in Germany.
Yes, I grew up in the U.S. and I live in Germany now for a little while before I go back to Zambia next year.
Okay. So just walk us through your passion, Joseph, how you've lived in the United States most of your life and you have such a passion for Zambia.
You know, it's like the opposite. You know how a lot of people from Zambia want to come to America. And I kind of look at it as like a Dube song, on the other side, where I spent most of my time in the U.S. and I've always dreamed about going back to Zambia itself. And so I decided to pretty much my life to get a, you know, as much as education as I can, so by the time I go to Zambia, I can bring something back to the country.
Okay, great. Yeah. And what about with you, Andrew? You've lived in Australia and for the last 7 years. What's driving you to do something positive in Zambia?
I believe that, you know, it's about seeing what we have here. You know, I've been here for just about 7 years now. And obviously having been raised in Zambia and seeing what we don't have there now and what we can have, I just thought, you know, I could, you know, get educated here as well and learn more and just take what I have, what I've learned here and take it back home.
Okay. I believe Siddiq Gelo has joined us as well. Siddiq, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Good morning, good evening, and good afternoon,
good morning,
everyone. I believe there's Andrew and Joseph, right?
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, my two favorite people. John is my new favorite. No, Joseph, sorry, not John.
How are you, Siddiq?
I'm fine. How are you? Andrew, it's good to hear your voice, my brother.
Yes, so,
Andrew is my partner in crime.
Andrew's resume reads that he's a worship leader, so I don't know about the crime part. But, Siddiq, you are seen in the social media a lot, and a lot of us can conclude that your aspirations for Zambia are political. How do you intend to bring what you have learned in the United States, having lived in the United States, looking at American politics, how do you plan on injecting that in the Zambian culture?
Well, leadership starts now. Right now, I think we are already leading. When I say we, I'm talking about all of us here through dialoguing with people in Zambia. Right now, I'm connected with people on the ground there, including politicians. Some of them are even coming to one of the events we're having here in America. I believe that's already a way of us leading and dialoguing with people concerning development. How are we going to do it? Definitely going back to Zambia is the ultimate part of it. And I think it starts with us people getting to know us from Zambia. In a way like the way we said with Andrew, making noise. Not literally, but you know, talking about how Zambia has to develop in every aspect of it, may it be political development and other issues. I think we're doing that already. I don't know whether I've answered the question.
Yes, you have. Coming back to you, Joseph, your passion for Zambia has been in the rural areas. Why rural Zambia?
Because that's where my family is from. Most of my family, they live in Tenje Village, and that's like far away from any major city. And it's about 2 hours away from Chipata, which is the closest city. And so I decided to focus on them because they're very important. Because most of the people who live in Zambia, 60%, no, about maybe I'll say 85% now, live in the rural areas. And it seems like the government's only focused on the people who are living in Lusaka or the people who live in Chipata or in Dola, but nobody really focuses on the rural areas except for maybe some of these U.S. agencies. And so when I decided to bring the concept of Chulindiga Enterprises to Zambia, my main focus was to be able to see if I can develop the rural areas first, because if I can make it and develop the rural areas, then it would be easy to kind of interlock that development into bigger cities.
Mm-hmm. So, Andrew, your story is very interesting. You left Zambia at the age of 5. You live in the United States, you're deployed, you're now in Germany. Can you just briefly walk us through the cultural shock? You come here to the United States with that, you know, that impression that you have of Zambia. Then you go to Zambia with American influence so heavy on your mind. Just walk us through that.
Well, when I came to the U.S., I came here when I was young, about 5 to 6 years old, and I didn't know any English at all. And, you know, my stepfather that brought us from Zambia, he wasn't really a wealthy man at all. It's a misconception that they think all the white people from America are rich. but they're really not. But I wouldn't have it any other way because he kind of made me work for, you know, he kind of made me a go-getter. You know, he gave me opportunity to be able to educate myself and be able to move forward in my life to the point where I am today. And the biggest shock, I say, when I got to America was actually integrating with the Americans. And it wasn't the white Americans, but it was actually the black Americans because I faced the most racial issues with them. And so because I had a African accent, number one, number two, I couldn't speak that well as far as English. And the fact that, you know, in media, Africa is looked on like everybody just wears, you know, a little string that covers up their private parts and that's it. That's kind of the idea of Africa. So I had a hard time dealing with the blacks in America. And 20 years later, about maybe 25 years later when I went back to Zambia, it's completely different when I went to Zambia, you know. Just because I speak, this is the part that I didn't really like about Zambia. Because I speak American English, right, everybody automatically thought, number one, that I had money. Number two, they put me on a level of respect like they put me on a level of respect like no other, you know, just because of the way I spoke. And, you know, then I was talking to some scholars in Zambia and some professors, and the one thing they could tell me is, like, hey, you speak like a white man. If I didn't know you were black, then I would have said you were a white man. So that was kind of a culture shock to kind of, like, you know, go to Zambia and me being a Zambian, everybody thinking that, you know, this is a white guy, you know, he has the white mentality. And then going to America, it was like, okay, it seems like I don't fit in any of these any of these cultures or countries. So it's quite difficult to deal with that.
Wow. You truly have been an alien, sorry to say that, in your home country when you return, and then you come, when you were here in the United States, thinking you'd integrate with the African Americans and have a hard time at it. So when you decided to start working on projects in Zambia, did you face any kind of, what hindrances or challenges did you face? Make sure that your projects were successful.
Well, to be surprisingly, like I said, the way I present myself and the way, you know, I talk, it was kind of easy for me to be able to get the right documentation done in Zambia. And the challenges that I really faced in Zambia were trying to actually get, the biggest one was trying to get.
Roger, we're getting some feedback.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Okay, let me see. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay, so the challenges that I was talking about was actually trying to get the land and trying to actually, trying to get to know the rules and regulations of how business is done in Zambia. And making sure I know all the rules and regulations, so therefore I wouldn't get in trouble by the current government and everything else. And that was kind of challenging because it took a bunch of hours of studying and actually going through, spending a whole bunch of money traveling all over Zambia to try to figure out how to do certain stuff in certain areas. You know, because the information is not really there. You know, it's not like in America where, you know, you can be in New York City and then you go somewhere like maybe Buffalo, New York, and then they can look in the system and everything matches. In Zambia, you know, it's like if you're in Lusaka, everything is done in Lusaka, but when you go to Chipata, it's completely different. The systems don't interlink with each other. So that was the challenge, is going from Lusaka to trying to finish something and trying to register something and then going to Chipata and not having any type of foundation of how to do the exact same thing I'm trying to achieve near Chipata. So it was quite challenging to deal with that, the lack of information, the lack of integration of information and stuff like that.
Okay. So, Andrew, I'm bringing you back into the conversation. So when you came to Australia, you definitely had a passion to help fellow Zambians. You tried to help individuals, but then you decided to change the plan and just do something from a whole different perspective. Just inform the listeners, you know, how you made that decision.
Well, I've been here, like I said, 7 years, and during that time, I've worked with a lot of local Zambians here, using the community, the Zambian community here. Obviously, we get to see so much happening in Zambia, and You know, there's been a lot of development there, but like, you know, like Joseph has mentioned, most of the development is in the capital city or the main town. And, you know, rural areas need a lot of development as well. So, you know, I just thought, you know, I could do something back home, you know, whether I'm there or I'm not there, but I think the most important thing is to put something up that will be beneficial to the local Zambians. In the last couple of years, say maybe the last 3 years, I've helped people finish college or, you know, with the little money I've been able to make, support someone maybe, you know, going through high school or working on a project. And I thought, you know, if I can do that and there are organizations that can actually support things like that, you know, then I might as well, if there's nothing like that there, then I might as well start something or work with people that would be in a similar, you know, sort of line of work or with a similar passion. Obviously, we get to chat with Siddiq when it comes to local projects and, you know, what we could change. But obviously, there's a government, you know, so going past that government is a headache if you're going to work with them. So as individuals and in our little own ways, we might as well, you know, put up what we can. And, yeah, just a passion to see someone helped or do something for someone who can't do anything for themselves.
All right. So for those who don't know about Andrew, Andrew's background is mainly in IT and also photography. So, Andrew, are you having, I mean, with the kind of knowledge that you have and your capabilities working remotely, how's that working out for you and your contacts in Zambia? Any challenges or is it smooth sailing?
Interestingly, I'll say, you know, I was obviously, you know, laughing when Joseph mentioned that, you know, he had to move from Chipata going to Lusaka and all that, which is true, you know, and that's the biggest problem we have in Zambia. Before I came to Australia, I used to consult back in Zambia and I had access to a lot of, you know, computers and, you know, auctions and all that kind of thing. And I did offer, I think the organizations I offered were like the Zambia Police. I offered to say, not with police, I can actually put up a computer there, okay, for a start. And I could put up something maybe at the post headquarters so that they could maybe a server and something, then they can communicate as a trial.
Mm-hmm.
That never went anywhere. You know? So when I came here and, you know, to sort of like see what I've gotten to learn the last couple of years, you know, I've been done a bit of forensics in the last couple of years, you know, as a short course just to sort of like get inspired on what they do, CSIs and all these kind of things. So to see all that knowledge, photography and, you know, best ways of communication, best ways of leadership, I've, you know, worked with the local government here as well. And I've got a few friends that are actually ministers in the state government here. So to sort of like get that exposure and be around these people, be involved in community projects, be involved in Aboriginal projects and ethnic projects, sort of like opens your mind up to want to do much more than, you know, than you thought you could do. So, yeah, my, you know, it just goes there. The challenges I've had dealing with Zambia is, well, things are not done on time or people will not actually respond. So that holds you, like, I've been trying to do something for the last 5 years and I think I got to confirmation maybe in the last couple of weeks for something like that. Maybe I sent a request for 5 years ago. That's a chartered bank as well. You know, I used to have an account there. With just one mix-up, the account was closed after I don't know how many, you know, months. But still, you know, you can't resolve that because you try to send someone, they don't want to allow them. Or you send documentation, then they say, oh, we didn't receive it. Then you courier more documentation, then, you know, they say we didn't receive it. Then I even get refunds from the Australian Post because if they don't receive mail there and they confirm, Australian Post gets to give you $100 for compensation. You know, and I'm there thinking, you know, where do we go? Because it's a bit crazy. So the challenges are just, I guess, administrative. You know, people are not trustworthy if you're going to give them something to help you on. There are people that could do it, but some of them, you know, feel it's, you know, you might as well just go there and do it yourself. So, yeah, the challenges have been, yeah, more remote working, unless maybe my family in some parts, yes, have been able to help, but for external individuals, it's a bit difficult.
It's amazing to hear what you still go through. I know the Zambians are making attempts to improve the system, but it's just amazing to hear that we are still lagging behind. So, Mr. Gelo, as a politician or a person in leadership, a person who's very visible in social media, based on what you have heard from Joseph and also from Andrew, how do you see that this gap can be bridged?
Okay, you know what? I was listening in and out for some reason. The phone was not really, I don't know whether it's my end or their end, but I will say this, maybe it's out of topic, but I think the way we are connecting, you have Joseph in Germany, Andrew in Australia. Technology has brought us together to work on projects like never before. And all we have to do is just take it to the next level. Joseph is going back to Zambia. He's got projects that he's doing. He's spoken to us about it. Definitely he's going to need financing from us. That's one way of linking up. And then a whole lot of us actually want to go back to Zambia, probably by 2016, at least at least a few of us, and then others probably another time. We're working together now. I think we've already started. And that link is very, very important. I don't know whether it's connected to what was being spoken about.
It is, and you have answered the question. You have answered the question. So, Siddiq, where would you see the greatest need is? I know you have contacts on the ground. Joseph's passion is start from the rural, go into the cities. I think, Andrew, your project might be mostly centered around the major cities. So, Siddiq, today you were given the opportunity to say, okay, go home and start working from home, where would you concentrate most of your work or your passions in?
Wow, that's a very, very exciting question. To be honest with you, all my life I've always just visited or gone to rural areas. But let's be honest. I may be wrong. Joseph may correct me here. 70% of the population probably. Not really. I mean, the urban, Zambia is very urbanized, but the grassroots are very, very important. The need is really in rural areas. So if any politician is doing something, they have to reach the people on the ground, and those rural areas are very, very important. I would actually do that. I have to give a shout out to Mal Sampa. This is a man that's working with the youth. He's working with people that are going to take the realms of power in future. He is tirelessly working there. I've done a research on him, and he's doing the right thing. And if I went to Zambia, that's where I would touch. Not really just, it doesn't matter whether it's the rural or the urban place. We have to touch people, the people that need us. Those little kids, those youths that have not been working, those youths that can be working by the roadside, building and making gates for houses. Those others that are very talented in doing certain things. Those are people that we need to empower. So it's just a place where there is a need. I'll go there, and that's what I want to do. I want to make a difference, like the two brothers are doing.
Mm. Mr. Banda, I was watching. Thank you so much, Sidik, for that. I'm sure you'd be able to accomplish much. I know when you start doing something, a lot of times you get a very high response and a high success rate. Let me bring in Mr. Banda back in the discussion. So I recently viewed some of your YouTube videos where the one that's impressive for me, I mean, all of them are, but I saw how you worked through in making a rosteri. Am I saying that right?
A rotisserie.
Okay. Thank you, rotisserie. Oh, my gosh. Got tongue-tied there. Forgive me. Got excited with my question. So we see these, those of us who are, I mean, it's here in Zambia, I'm sure, but you see rotisserie chickens, you buy them, and they smell so good. The aroma is just amazing. The chicken tastes great. So of all things, you just decided, let me try and build this rotisserie stand. And you worked with the locals. And besides, your nyanja is very good, by the way. I heard you in the video. So good job that you haven't lost it. So just what inspired you to do that?
Well, what inspired me was I do a lot of studies because I'm an international relations major. And so I do a lot of reading, just random reading sometimes. And what inspired me is that I came across a pamphlet called Small Scale Manufacturing and how it can improve sub-Saharan Africa, right? And I was reading this manual, and it just pretty much breaks it down of how to improve sub-Saharan, not just Zambia, but all the countries in sub-Saharan Africa. And one of the biggest topics they were talking about was called small scale manufacturing. And the other topic they were talking about is renewable energy, and how both of those two major topics can change Zambia as a whole nation. And luckily, I just happened to be in Germany, which Germany is the king of small-scale manufacturing all over the world. I mean, that's why everybody, you know, drives around. Like, everybody really likes the BMW, Mercedes-Benz, all these companies, like Sealy. All these companies come, not Sealy, but what is it? Siemens. They come from Germany. And so Germany, they have the fourth largest economy in the world, and they're a very small country. And the reason why they have the largest economy is because they believe in small-scale manufacturing. They don't let big companies like Walmart come in this country at all. Walmart came here for 1 year, and they got kicked out. And so what I realized is I tried to take that concept of a small-scale manufacturing to the rural parts of Zambia. And now we were successful. I mean, you saw the YouTube video. And what happened was I wanted to build a rotisserie because, first of all, everybody in Zambia, especially in the rural areas like Petauke and all these other places, they pretty much fry their chicken. They fry it. There's no other way except for frying. Maybe they put it over a fire and they roast it. But they've never seen the concept of a rotisserie. And here in Germany, they have these rotisseries that go around all over different communities, and they sell chicken, and they make millions and millions of dollars doing it. And so I took this idea from Germany and decided to see if I can take it to Zambia, and it worked out perfectly. But I wanted to do it in the rural areas because if I can design this product and make it in a rural area, therefore they can get the parts without having to either go to China or ordering them from the States. They can get the parts there in Petauke or the local Lusaka. And so that's what interests me the most. And if I was successful in doing so, then it's possible that whole small-scale manufacturing is very possible in Africa. Yeah, and that's the reason why I decided to start with that project.
Wow. You know, you remind me of the campaign that the Americans had when they noticed a lot of things were manufactured in China, and they had this campaign for Made in America, you know, American branded clothes, items, furniture, equipment, etc. So I like, you know, in my mind as I'm listening to you, I like how you're thinking, you know, Made in Zambia. In fact, narrow it down to Made in Petauke. You are working with the locals. You are buying things that can be bought in Petauke. So that's pretty impressive. So Andrew, let's bring you back here in the fold. We haven't forgotten about you there in the down under. So you introduced me to Joseph, and you're good friends with Sidik. So I can tell that you have a very strong network. Let the listeners know that you have worked on an audiobook. You have worked with a local Zambian author and helped him, you know, with the book. That's just impressive. Are there any more projects like that that you'd like to talk about? It doesn't necessarily have to be an audiobook, but anything outside that.
In fact, the audiobook was just an experimental sort of thing I put up. When a friend of mine told me that he was writing a book, he put me as part of his team, and he wanted me to help him with the book launch. So I thought, you know, instead of me obviously just providing the website and, the administrative side of things, the organization, the event, I thought, let me surprise him with something that he hasn't done yet. So I got permission from him, and he gave me the introduction, the chapter one and the chapter two. And I hired a voiceover person. So I directed the voiceover person, and I told them this is how it's supposed to be, and you have to read this word like an African, you know. And, so we actually did the voiceover thing. We had chapter one, chapter two, and chapter three done. Then on the actual book launch, I just told him, hey, I've got a surprise for you. So we presented that, and he was very surprised because I had like 100 free copies for everyone that came to the event. But just apart from that, obviously I've done a lot of things, as in, you know, in the lines of mentorship. At the moment, I'm actually helping with youth mentorship. I'm putting up a program for the African Professionals of Australia. They asked me to run a program for the youth. So I'm actually into youth mentorship. I've worked with the Smith family. It's a project here that helps kids in high school that once, obviously, they'll be going through hard times and maybe at home and all that, and they need support at school. So I've participated in that.
Is worked with a local... Is the mentorship program in Australia or is it in Zambia?
It's a program. These are all programs here.
Okay.
But there are things that, you know, I've been involved in, and I'm actually looking at how best those relate to Zambia. So my participation and involvement in all these programs have been with a vision of, yes, I'm doing this here, but how best would I put this in place in Zambia? And like obviously Joseph has noted, most of the development needs to be done if you're going to bring Zambia to, you know, to a developed nation. You need to look at the rural area, you know, the villages is my passion as well. I've never been to my own village. So my passion, obviously, from here is to, you know, obviously going back to Zambia will be to, you know, help develop the rural areas. Other areas I'm looking at, or other projects I'm actually looking at is, I'm actually looking at helping to build a sports facility. So the task I've been given by colleagues is to sort of export places within Zambia that are, let's say, impoverished or like really not the well-developed areas. And in these places, the facilities that are supposed to be built there would be like maybe a basketball court or a much more sports court. So these are all like really projects that are for Zambian-based things that we have here. But intention is to actually replicate the same thing that we have here in Australia as a developed nation. Put them in a Zambian context. So yeah, I've been, you know, it's basically all over. It's about learning what, you know, what the West has, and putting it in place for, you know, a country like Zambia.
Wow, you're listening to Zambia Blog Talk Radio, Diaspora and Truth. I'm your host Matilda. I'm sitting in for Kwambo Kapilikisha. Today, our goal is to give a positive insight of what the Zambians in the diaspora are doing. A lot of times, the Zambians in the diaspora get a bad rap to say, we're not doing anything, we clean homes, we are working subpar jobs. And the purpose for this was to highlight that we do have a passion for Zambia. We may not be in Zambia, but our heart is there. We're sending money. We're working on different projects. And it's not, diaspora does not just consist of the United States. So that is why I also brought in you know, Joseph Banda, who is in Germany, and Andrew Kaniki, who is in Australia. If you have any questions, please press 1, and we will, any questions or comments, please press 1. Or if you are listening online, you can send your messages via Facebook. So, you know, Andrew or Joseph, I'm not sure if Siddiq is still on the line, but a few months ago, there was an initiative in Zambia that was suggested to bring back indigo. I know that on Zambia Block Talk Radio, we had that discussion. Mr. Charlie, who's on the hosting in for me today, will be able to speak on this later. But we are generations apart. There's a generation that strongly felt this is not a good idea. And then there's another generation that says, you know what, it is good. We need to bring industries, industrialization back into the rural countries. Either one of you, what's your take on that?
Well, Andrew, I hope you don't mind. I think industrialization is very important, and that's industrialization is the only thing that can get a country moving. And the major part of the industrialization is the renewable energy that I talked about earlier. And in order for, and for instance, let's look at history here. Let's look at all the world history. In the United States, right, since we're talking about Zambian diaspora, the United States went through an industrialization period in the 1800s, right? And because of that industrialization period, the U.S. is what it is today, right? China, 20 years ago, wasn't the way China is today. If you go to China now, it's the second largest economy in the world. But 20 years ago, it wasn't an industrialized country. What they did is they educated all their young, their youth. That's why I'm so passionate about youth movement. And those young and the youth are now running China the way it is today, off of industrialization. And this is the reason why China is in, has its hands all over Zambia and all the other countries getting natural resources, because their industrialization is so strong. And so when it comes to Zambia, that is the only way Zambia is going to move forward. Because like I said, Zambia pretty much focuses on it exploits copper, right? That's their main development drive. However, right, exploiting the natural resources like copper does not create any jobs. You know, it only creates jobs for the few. And, of course, Zambia does not get rich of it, off of the copper. Otherwise, Zambia would have been rich already, right? And it's easy for the European powers, the people who have control over the copper mines in Zambia, to be able to exploit the copper and then not pay the taxes. That's why about $8.8 billion is owed to the Zambian people themselves. So the only thing that we have left over to do is industrialization, and this goes back to my theory of small-scale manufacturing, and that's the theory that I tried in the town of Pituke. And there is a lot of challenges when it comes to small-scale manufacturing, of course, like, you know, the issue with transportation and the Zambian infrastructure itself. But it can still be done. I mean, look at China. China is a perfect example. And like Andrew was talking about earlier today, it's like it's not that difficult for these politicians to actually emulate what has happened in China for the last 20 years. The Americans did it with the British, you know, and all these different throughout the history, all these different major empires have copied certain empires to get to where they are today. And it's really not that difficult to copy and, you know, make it a Zambian product. So industrialization is very, very important in terms of small-scale manufacturing, and I'm going to let Andrew talk before I get to my next point as of our, how energy can play a role in all this. Hello?
You're still on. Andrew, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay.
Just to add on, yeah, like I always say, I'll concur with what Joseph has said. What Zambia needs is to like build the small industries. You know, you've got people in that have got small, like we've got ideas, you know, and if we come up with a system to say, hey, we've got a thing that they're trying to do now, you know, trying to put all the companies together. Before we had ZCBC, we used to have the Indigo Group. We used to have dairy produce gold. And those sort of like obviously helped the economy at the time. you know, but obviously due to some management side of things, they didn't really work out well. But with good management and good, sort of like positive administration in all these places, we are likely to have a good economy as a country. So what people need in the rural areas, obviously, for small-scale transportation as well as the loans. I don't know how this community development fund thing works at the moment, or small-scale loans work at the moment, because there's no sort of a record that, you know, we could go to sort of like see how that is, you know, improving. But I think we need to find a way of, you know, putting all this information into a channel that not statistics, you know, and it's easier for us to sort of like use that for our economic discussions as well.
Okay. Joseph, I'm going to open up the line to our listeners. We have a number who have indicated that they have questions and comments. Roger, I'll let you let me know who's on the line, or if you have any question, Mr. Charlie, you can go ahead and ask the question.
All right, thank you. Maybe Joseph wanted to say something before maybe I come in. He can go ahead with his point, and then I can contribute. Joseph, go ahead.
Well, the only thing I was going to say was that as far as, you know, I was on the ground in Zambia a couple months ago, and then at the same time, I've looked into all the pamphlets and the writings about Zambia, the economy and stuff, because I was coming back to this country. And as far as making Zambia industrialized, there's five sectors that the international community in Zambia itself has actually recognized that to be the best potential for the development of Zambia in rural areas. And those sectors are pretty simple because they involve pretty much high employment rates at the same time, low technology skills, and that's pretty much in like wood processing and stuff like that, textiles. Let me see here. It says wood processing, textiles, and metalwork. Like those, if the Zambian government and the Zambian people start focusing on those areas of development, then apparently the research is already out there. You know, people have spent billions and billions of dollars trying to research all these things and see how they work. It's just that, you know, there's a lack of information between, you know, the Western world and the, you know, in Zambia. So nobody knows that these things already exist. And that's what I want to put out there.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. Gentlemen, it's so refreshing to hear people talk about topic away from Lusaka, as always. In our next program coming up on top of the hour, we are visiting again the conference which President Obama hosted for the African leaders. And we are going to zero in some of the projects which are going to be done all over Africa, not all over Africa, in some of the African countries. I guess my question in that discussion is going to be, how can we tap into that vision? For instance, Blackstone is going to Africa to invest in energy and energy production. I don't know what they're going to do, but how can we, as Zambians, the question we are going to ask, steer that ship of Blackstone to come to Zambia? Coca-Cola is going to be investing in the delivery of clean water. Zambia holds 40% of the water resource in Southern Africa, and yet we don't have people are not serviced well. I was talking to my wife the other day. I've lived in Canada for the past 5 years. I've never seen water. No water in the house. So how does this easily happen in our country on a daily basis? GE is going to be developing African infrastructure. Marriott Hotels is building hotels. As Andrew and Joseph, you've rightly said, how can we replicate? How can we talk to these people, gentlemen, lady and gentlemen here, talk to these people so that part of their eye, their ball is based in Zambia and Zambia away from Lusaka? That is number one. Number two, gentlemen, I've always been thinking about this. Zambia is reaching 50 years of independence today. And up to today, we haven't figured out what other people do with our copa. So I'm a Kasempa guy. I come from Kasempa. Joseph, you want to know, Zambia Block Talk Radio, we covered a lot of districts. Lundazi was one of them. And we've been in a lot of districts. How is it that up to this day, we have not figured what other people do with our copa? So I went online, I've researched a lot of stuff. When we talk about industrialization, why are we not going to say enough of our copper going away to create jobs somewhere else? Now it is time to make copper pipes here in Zambia. So those who are going to maybe be with us in the next discussion, it's going to be a heated one. But thank you, gentlemen, for what you are doing. You are not alone. You are not alone. Probably we should link up for a summit again sometime so that we can put our resources together. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Baroja. Was that those were your questions lined up for your next program, correct?
Well, that was my contribution, but you have another gentleman here who wants to ask a question. That is 412, last four numbers, 5167. Good morning.
Morning, Mrs. Mbaya here. I thought you knew my number by now, Mr. Roger.
Yes,
anyway,
I knew it, but I didn't want to mention your name.
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to talk to a gentleman in Australia. I'm interested in what he's doing in terms of photography because I have a studio in Zambia there, and I wanted to do some kind of projects, some projects that I wanted to do. So I'll be happy for him to get my information so we can be able to talk sometime and see what could be done.
Okay, I will inbox him your number, then he can text you.
Yes, that would be good. That's all I wanted to contribute in a way.
Okay. I will inbox your number.
Martin Bayer, what kind of studio? Is it just still photography or film as well?
I was doing film and still, but since I'm not there, you need to be there all the time. Things sometimes don't go the right way. But you need to partner with right, like-minded people. I think that's the way we can do things a bit faster, I think. Because if you're by yourself, things don't, you're just going through the circles sometimes. But you need a challenge. You need someone who can challenge it and know we have to do this way. No, we got to go that way, or no, that's the right way, or, you know, stuff like that. So I think that's one of the problems we have. People that even either in Australia, England, we're just loners. You know, I don't like that. We do things like you go to Zambia. Oh, I went to Zambia, I bought two shoes, and I gave one kid on the corner. Fine. But the question is to have like-minded people and say, look, you're in Germany, I'm here. Here I have $5,000. You have $10,000. What can we together do? Because most of us are not even, all of us are not even millionaires anyway, because you need money to do any project you're talking about, whether it's small, whether it's big. So my thinking is that most of the time the Zambians, we're never together. One by one, yes, we can go to Zambia and come back, but we're never together, say, my brother's doing this, I'm doing this. Can we put our resources together so we can expand much better? I think that's one of the problems I've seen. We do make.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that, Mr. Simbaya. I will also contact you offline and connect you with Mr. Kaniki and see what kind of projects you guys can work on together. So we have about 10 minutes before the show is over, and I know we get excited towards the end. We have a lot of questions that come in. So while I still have a little bit of time, let me ask you, Joseph, and then I'll come to you, Andrew. You are away from home, but the Zambians have a negative connotation about the people in the diaspora, but we want to turn things around. And we have people also listening to the program who would like to help. How would you like for us to help? What kind of help are you looking for in order to make your projects more successful?
Yeah, what kind of help I'm looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, to be truly honest with you, right now, what I've learned is it's very difficult to actually conduct these projects while I'm in Germany. So majority of the time, I have to be on the ground, because for some reason when I relay a certain message to Impetuoki to say, hey, this needs to happen by this, it doesn't, like Andrew said, it really doesn't happen. And so as far as everybody else is helping, I really don't know, to be honest with you. But the only thing is, I'm having issues trying to establish a great communications between me and my workers in Petuke, who are doing all these projects in Petuke. And I pretty much, it's very difficult to do it from Germany. That's why I said I can't really wait to, you know, get boots on ground in Germany, I mean in Zambia next summer.
Okay. Well, before you even come in and answer the question, Joseph, have people been very receptive? I mean, the projects they're doing are good and they're awesome. But just like foreign aid, we need it, but then there are times when we say we don't want it, yet we need it. How receptive have the people been in the various projects that you're working on? How receptive are they to your help and your program?
No, they're very receptive, very. And they like the ideas. Because pretty much, especially in the rural areas, nobody's really doing, like, you know, focusing on renewable energy and small-scale manufacturing in these rural areas. So when they see me or they see my truck pull up, you know, they're very friendly. They always offer me all kinds of different stuff and, you know, thank you for helping Bwana, thank you for helping, stuff like that. But as far as the people, as far as here in the in America, for instance, I opened up a thing called Helping in Tenge, which is, you know, supposed to get funds for the project, the renewable energy project in Tenge Village. And because we were going to purchase a wind tower from a company called AGV in Nuremberg, Germany, and that tower was going to go to Tenge. And getting foreign aid is kind of difficult because they want you to set the project up first, and then once it's successful, that's when the foreign aid starts coming. So the initial capital to start this project, that's very difficult because a lot of people don't believe you because there's so many frauds saying that people are trying to do certain stuff in Africa, but it's fraud. People are just living off of other people trying to get funds. I say that's the only issue that I have is, you know, trying to convince people, regardless of how many pictures I have, regardless of what they see, trying to convince people in the Western world to actually try to support these programs. And so, but people in Zambia, they're very – Hello?
Go ahead.
But as far as people in Zambia, they're very acceptive.
Okay. So how can we find out about the Intenge business project? Is there a website that we can go to? We can start drumming up support for you?
Yeah, I created, I don't know if you ever heard of that, a place called GoFundMe.
Yes.
There's the website GoFundMe. I started with that And then also at the same time, of course, I just opened up a Facebook page called Joseph Banda, you know, the public figure page, and where I'm going to, you know, keep putting ideas of how we can develop Zambia on that page and what we're doing in Zambia on that page. So that's where I'm going to keep updating people of what's going on in Zambia, what I'm doing in Zambia, and how, you know, to help if they wanted to help. But between GoFundMe and my Facebook page, which I just opened up about last week, that's how you can find out about these things.
On your Facebook page, you have the GoFundMe link so that people can go directly there and start making a few contributions?
No, I don't. I'll put that on there today. I had it on my old Facebook, but, you know, I had to delete the Facebook to add my old one, so I started a whole brand new one, and I didn't quite transfer everything over yet.
Okay, great. Andrew, I know it's getting late there. It's almost the next day. What about you with the projects that you're working on? I know we may have you back later on Zambia Block Talk Radio to talk about your upcoming documentary that you're doing on one of our public figures in Zambia. But on the things that you're working on, what would you like to get from the people both in the diaspora and the people back home? How can we help?
I'll go back to where Roger did mention on, you know, what companies that are actually doing something like Coca-Cola is going to go into water, you know, development and all that. then I'll come back to where Joseph is. You know, what it is if anything is going to happen, like if I've got this idea, then if I'm going to put up something, I have to actually be on the ground. That's number one. To actually obviously relay the information and relay what I actually am looking at doing. This is because obviously technology hasn't really blossomed as much in Zambia, even though we're like the first African country to have the internet. But what we need to do is, what I'm looking at is obviously for help. In the next couple of months, I'll be putting up like a crowdfunding thing, which is similar to what obviously Joseph has now. But these are all aimed at development in the, you know, these are aimed at allowing people to be part of the project. Meaning, you know, if I put up a project, they know they're putting something towards that project and they're working with that project. You know, so that would be the diaspora obviously coming in play and supporting that project as best as they can. So at the moment, you know, until obviously I've set foot to actually start something, and would have shared obviously information what needs to be done, then, you know, I really can't say much. But obviously in the next couple of months, this should come to light.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely, yeah.
Andrew, you know our former host for this show, Diaspora and Truth, Mukuka Mayuka. She was in Australia.
Yes.
And you know she's in Zambia working closely with Bongo Hive. Are you doing anything to collaborate with them? I'm not sure.
Oh, I did
lost. Are you doing anything to collaborate with Bongo Hive?
At the moment, not yet, but I have expressed interest in coming up with a club that he did mention that Simosa did mention that it could be of interest to them. So once I've presented that to them, then we could look at that. But at the moment, not yet. So these are all planned events. So, yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to Diaspora and Truth on Zambia Blog Talk Radio. I have been your host, Matilda Mwava-Lupus. Today we have been discussing with Joseph Banda, who is based in Germany, and Andrew Kaniki, who is in Australia. We were briefly joined by Sidiki Gelo, who is in Atlanta, Georgia. This has been a very interesting conversation. I know a lot can come out of this. We may have you guys back individually rather than on a round table discussion, but at least I believe this has opened up a door to have positive information be placed out there for our listeners to say we do have a passion for Zambia. Coming up next is a roundtable discussion with Roger Charlie. He's going to be on for a couple of hours. That will move so quickly. So listeners, please, when this program is over, please dial back in and participate in this conversation. It's one you do not want to miss. Do we have any last comment, Mr. Charlie, before we log off?
Sir, for the good work, thank you so much, gentlemen. And then coming up next, again, is our open forum looking at the just-ended U.S.-Africa Leadership Conference in Washington. We are also going to visit Missouri. What's going on there with the riots, our black folk? What is happening? What causes all these kind of problems? That is later in the day. But first, we are going to be joining me in another 1 minute. So we are going to drop those who are going to coin back. It's going to be a very interesting discussion. Thank you so much, Ms. Luca.
Thank you so much, Mr. Matuso.
Lord, I thank you for this job.